Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. My name is Marcus Speller. Jim Campbell's with us.
Hello.
Luke Moore's with us.
All right.
And that man, Pete Donaldson, is here.
Good evening.
It's the weekend, or near enough, when you'll be hearing this.
When you'll be hearing this.
Hear me now.
Yeah, it's preview time, where we talk about those footballs that are coming up very, very soon.
We can look backwards a little bit, though. We've had a full complement of Premier League matches.
To be fair, I think it'd be foolish not to.
A full programme.
Yeah, all right.
Good. Just put it out there.
Yeah. Using the P word.
A full
very
schedule.
Early on.
Yeah. As they say in Premier League parlance now, which is like very much aping the American sport arena, match week 16.
Yeah. Is that right?
We all know it. Yeah.
Lovingly.
On Google, when you type in the referee searches to see who's refereeing what match, they say, the Premier League say, match officials confirmed for match week 16.
That's right.
So does the midweek fixture count as 16 and the weekend fixture
in between? It's just on a round of games.
Right. So why do they call it match week then? It's 3 weeks in 2 weeks.
But if, for example, you have
old
match
money,
week,
mate.
If
old
you have
money.
Match week 14 and there's an international break, it's 2 weeks hence, there's another
you
game.
You lose a week.
You don't. It's still called it match week 15 or 16. It's just
I'm
a round of games.
It. Yeah.
It's the imperial system.
The farce is what
We've
it is.
Still not onto the metric
if
system
you take
yet.
10 minutes after, I can explain to you properly.
I'm still calling the Barclay card.
Doing the Owen Coyle.
Barclay card premiership.
The Patrick Barclay Premier League. Yeah.
As he would definitely like to call it.
Indeed. Manchester City are playing Arsenal, Jim. This is an enormous one. For both teams, they are chasing those Chelseas.
It's the thigh rubber of the weekend, isn't it?
It really is. And I mean, the danger here for both City and Arsenal is that it's a draw. Chelsea keep murdering everyone, and then that puts them even further ahead. That's the worry. Although I think, obviously, Arsenal's loss to Everton was to trick Bayern into a false sense of security. I think we had a similar thing with
February
Barcelona
when they play them. February.
So they don't do any research.
Okay,
from now
right.
And then they look at that and go, they're rubbish.
Yeah.
And then they won't watch us again. Yeah,
it's going to be very convincing come February then, isn't it?
Well, we'll see, won't we? It's been very convincing in the past. It's a tricky one. It's must win for both teams.
Arsenal's record against City recently is good. I think they're undefeated in the last six games.
It is good, but their record against Pep Guardiola obviously isn't great. And Guardiola's been making a lot of noise at the moment about how, you know, different the Premier League is from what he's experienced before. There's a lot of sort of, you know, the ball's in the air a lot, and he's trying to adapt to that. Arsenal play a style that suits his
style.
That is
true.
It could be a difficult trip. It will definitely be a difficult trip.
Should they start Olivier Giroud then? Play a few long balls.
Yeah, I mean, Giroud loves scoring against City, so it wouldn't be the worst idea.
But surely, Jim, that would be an idea, because if Pep Guardiola struggles against the long ball or his Manchester City side, my goodness, it should be party time in the Premier League for everybody else.
Fit up to handsome Olivier.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to get away from that. Guardiola comes over here, is meant to kind of bring a beautiful style of football. And then we think, actually, let's revert back to what we know and we should reap the rewards.
It's great. It's the sort of very English joy of just being a sod for the sake
but
of it.
I like that as a percentage of football fans and percentage of the media who are taking it very personally and seeing it as like an almost personal crusade. Mm-hmm. And will take credit if Guardiola fails in quotes in the Premier League. And they are almost so desperate for it to happen. They're, in my opinion, they're almost firing the gun straight away, saying it's happened already. Like, right, he doesn't like it, does he? Oh yeah, he comes over here. The Premier League's a bit different
with his shoes.
And quite. That was me though, wasn't it? With the shoes. but they're so fascinated by essentially what you would call the product, the Premier League product, that a lot of tabloid journalists and a lot of football people generally in the media are so proud of this product because it's probably because they haven't got anything to talk about the national team at the moment.
It is a good product.
It is.
It's our bread and butter.
But they're so proud of it. They really, really want someone that they see as bookish and a bit non-traditional and a bit introspective and a bit educationally minded.
Who won't give them the quotes.
To fail in it. Yeah. It's exactly the same way.
Like Wenger is now.
it's exactly the same way. They essentially want to convince themselves that the Premier League is a league that won't bend to his will. Mm-hmm. And they like that. And to me, it's exactly the same reaction they showed with AVB at Spurs, where they didn't like his style. They didn't like the cut of his jib. They didn't like the fact that he was quite a thoughtful, technically minded guy. And it's really interesting to see how they've shot their bolt so early with this. And they're already on the way to deciding that Guardiola is a failure. And they will take it personally very, 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 very. They'll be very prideful about it if Guardiola doesn't win the league this season.
They'll be very much threatened by the idea that, like, you know, anyone from anywhere else actually has a better way of doing things, that in some way the Premier League is unsophisticated. You know, it's that idea that this is the best league in the world. No, it's that old thing again.
But that idea of anyone from elsewhere, I mean, Antonio Conte's getting a lot of praise.
I'm talking about the worst sort of dregs of the tabloid.
I don't think it's that. I just think it's that he is seen, rightly or wrongly, as not paying fealty to the product. And even though Guardiola's not actually said that, I mean, Guardiola said only this week that it's an English style of football I need to adapt to. It's different for me. But on the other side of that, on the flip side of that, I read Sky Sports saying earlier today that he's used 8 different formations in 26 games. So maybe he's trying a little bit too hard.
Talking about this, Phil Neville leapt to his defence, didn't he, on Match of the Day midweek, saying that it was pathetic, the criticism that Guardiola's getting. Yeah.
Did he say that Loris Karius was the most pathetic?
Yeah.
But
it's not pathetic. Yeah. The criticism the Liverpool goalkeeper's getting. That's correct. Absolutely bang on.
Correct. Pep Guardiola went to thank Phil Neville, and Phil Neville said he should shut his mouth. Yeah. But wait for the punchline, Phil. Yeah. But with Guardiola, it is very interesting. And I take the points about the way the media are treating him. I think it's because he came as regarded as the best manager in the world.
Mm. Well, and also he didn't go straight to the Premier League. And I think that put a lot of noses out.
Last time round, he went
to Germany instead.
That's a fair point, actually.
And of all the places to go to, Germany as well.
Enjoy your sausages, Pep.
That country, they're just like us, but better.
In every conceivable way.
That's a personal slight.
Cricket.
Yeah. All right, then. Yeah. All right.
Do they play cricket? Maybe they don't know about it.
Yeah. Don't tell them. Do not tell the Germans. About the cricket. Yeah. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it.
Obviously, we're talking about Guardiola because he isn't doing so well. And Jose Mourinho is the only person to have stopped Pep Guardiola winning a league title, by the way.
We've said this before, but I think there's too much made of that. He stopped Guardiola winning a league title once.
Yeah, so he's the only person.
His record against Guardiola head-to-head is actually quite poor.
No, but the fact that I just dished out is correct. It's not. It's not.
Thanks,
it's not
Marcus.
But it's not about Jose Mourinho. It's about Pep Guardiola, that statistic. In other words, whenever he has a league campaign, he's pretty much going to win it. And he said himself as well, I'm not used to not winning the league, which is, again, fair enough. Yeah. A bit like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, really. I can see
why the press want to give him a bit of a slap when he says stuff like that.
What I would say is that with Olivier Giroud, you think he's only good coming off the bench, though. So you'd have to bring him on in the first minute if you wanted to get the most out of him.
that's not entirely true. He's very effective from the bench, but the problem with Giroud, obviously, is he's not had much game time, so he's going to be a little bit rusty. And when Olivier Giroud is rusty, he done fall over.
He's like the Tin Man.
He would be a nice time for him to play well against Man City because defensively they look poor. As I said a couple of weeks ago on the show, they don't really look like they want to do the basic things properly. And I know this, and I'm sort of loath to say this, but you know, like a week or two ago when they were beaten by Leicester, it was terrible weather, wasn't it?
It was hammering
it down with rain.
Well, okay.
And I know I'm loath to say it, but part of me thinks, oh, is that a factor?
Really?
I don't really like it.
Well, greasy surfaces, people are going to drop passes.
Most of those players have been playing here for a long time.
Actually, I can imagine Guardiola walking around behind before the game starts, like in the rain, having a massive tantrum, going, where I come from, this game would be called off. Yeah. We would play. It's below us. It's beneath us.
Well, it might get to the end of the season and they'll have won the league. They'll have turned it around and won the league, and Guardiola will go, I deliberately lost every wet and windy game just to show you I could still win the league.
That's not how we play football where I come from.
Well, actually, better teams who like the ball on the deck often water the pitch beforehand, don't they?
They do. Yeah. I think
they would probably like it if it was
a bit
of rain.
Think you'll find a Premier League pitch now that's not watered before a game.
Possibly.
Mm. No. But it absorbs water very well as well, the modern...
What, Pep Guardiola?
Pete, could you do a feature on things that absorb water very well?
Yeah. Bounty...
Now.
What?
Not now.
I'm just making a list note. Bounty. Oh,
okay.
Not the chocolate.
People's hair.
Some people's hair.
Yeah. Yeah, Pep Guardiola would be one who would be useless.
I imagine one of those Pep Guardiola cashmere sweaters probably would as well.
Yeah, I'd take that. Yeah. It's not heavy mix though, is it really? No, you need something a bit more...
it's the finest cashmere.
A bit more sheepy.
Yeah. Mm. Probably looking more like a merino wool.
Yeah, Guardiola talked about the second ball in English football.
He's changed his tune on that very quickly, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And also about tackles. But actually, is that not fair enough? A lot of managers would say, well, this is my philosophy, and they would appear to be quite stubborn. Now, Guardiola has some of the quotes you could say he's been quite stubborn, and he has been in the past as well, although it's been to his credit. But this time, maybe he is saying, you know what, I'm working out the runnings of this league, which is fair enough. And by the way, when we talk about English football, it tends to be won by people who aren't English.
How dare he not spend all of his time in Spain and Germany just watching the Premier League week in, week out, every single second of it.
In a bar that serves like full roast dinner. Yeah. And on another TV has reruns of Only Fools and Horses.
All day breakfast.
And the coronation.
All day breakfast.
The coronation.
And Sunday. You'll eat those mushrooms.
Yeah. I also do think, though, that he's inherited quite a poor defence anyway. Mm. I mean, it's the Man City's defence, generally speaking, is probably a bit of a broad brushstroke, but they do, when the company's not on top form and not in the team defensively, they do look like they fall apart a little bit. They've had players who either best years are behind them in the Premier League, like Kolarov and Zabaleta, or who've never really been fully up to it consistently. Otamendi, Di Michaelis.
Stones
is obviously still learning this trade.
Is Di Michaelis still there?
No, I'm just talking as City as a defensive unit over the last few years generally. And the other player, Mangala, who's obviously gone away on loan now. So it's something that he's not had an awful lot of time to put right defensively. And you never know. He may do so in the next transfer window.
It's a thing we see in the Premier League all the time, isn't it? I guess it's because it's such a sort of rough and tumble league and it is very, very fast. It is very tough to get a sort of cohesive defensive unit actually
Chelsea
just functioning
like
that. Chelsea are doing it very well. But they've gone to a back three, haven't they?
Chelsea and Spurs have really done that this season so far.
Pep had a long time to take the job, though, didn't he? Remember, he was kind of waiting in the wings for a long time.
He was offered in 2009.
Yeah. So he should really know everything he needs to know about the Manchester City squad and the people around it.
Yeah. I mean, he has been
no excuse since failure.
But listen, if you think Arsenal can get a result at the weekend and they've got a good record, good head-to-head record against Man City, they're 23-10 with Bet365. So £10 on that will return £33, including stake.
Mm. That's decent.
Well, Arsenal are 6 points behind Chelsea. Man City is 7 points behind Chelsea. Maybe Pep needs to take a leaf out of Antonio Conte's book, because he banned fizzy drinks and fruit juices at Manchester City, whereas Antonio Conte and the boys are having a beer after the match.
Yeah, but Antonio Conte's the sort of manager who will let you have a beer after the match, but you'll be very clear in like no uncertain terms that at any point he could take that right away from you.
Yeah, and you'll be on a treadmill while you're drinking it. Just burn it off as you drink it.
He'll
have his bottle, he'll be ready to sort of like clink it underneath the bottle so it kind of fizzes up in your face.
No, you clink it on top, don't you?
No, on the bottom. But you use the top of your bottle underneath theirs.
Do you?
Yeah.
That'll do your own drink, Pete.
No, sabotage.
Joke's on you.
Yeah, no, because the balls have got to come to the bottom.
No, we're not going for this now. You're wrong. You are wrong.
We'll get emails. It's fine.
And we'll put it to the test on the next Ramble Saturday. Tour.
We've got the Ramble Christmas drinks on Saturday.
I'm with Luke.
We'll
on
film
this
it.
One, I think that Conte, he said just one beer.
Oh, did he? Okay,
so have one beer. That's fine, yeah. And if you have another beer, then...
You imagine John Terry walking in
face.
With a 4 litre bottle of beer.
Just the one bottle for me.
Yeah, right, you're on your team, you can do what you want.
Yeah, exactly. You can drink four of them if you want. Speaking of booze, Yaya Toure in a spot of bother.
This is so weird. How is Yaya Toure so consistently weird? His birthday thing and his agent thing.
He was dished out a... because he said, "Oh, I didn't intentionally drink it. Mm-hmm. I thought the Coke tasted funny, mm-hmm. but I didn't intentionally drink it because I think he's quite a devout Muslim. He is, yeah. doesn't drink."
And I think the judge believed
it. Yeah, but the judge believed that he didn't do it intentionally, but he didn't believe that he didn't know he had drunk it afterwards.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because the Altoids quote was brilliant. He said something like, "I didn't intentionally drink it. I didn't know there was brandy in the Coke. However, when it came to driving home, I felt a bit tired."
I was a bit better quicker. At donuts than I remember. Yeah.
But he was dished out the largest ever financial sanction for any drink driving case in UK legal history.
Is that right?
Apparently, what? There's no...
£300.
No, there's no upper limit on how much you can be fined for being caught drunk driving. And he was fined £54,000.
Yeah, because clearly they were thinking about it. Right, he should be fined £540. Do you know how much he's on? Yeah. 54,000.
One thing I found interesting about reading around the case was that he was paid apparently, according to the, I don't know if it's the court papers, but it was certainly reported that he was paid £200,000 a week. But apparently his lawyer successfully argued that his net pay was £54,000 a week. Mm. So when everyone talks about footballers' wages being so high, £140,000 a week tax he's paying.
We need that.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Nice one, Yaya.
Yeah.
Get off his back. He's only on 54 grand a week.
Yeah. I'll put brandy in his cock for that.
It is a fair point.
I like the thought that Yaya did realise that he'd accidentally imbibed some alcohol. I was like, "Oh, Colo, you couldn't drive us home, could you?" I can't. I've had too much Calpol. Yeah. How is this always happening to us?
I just think that it's sad that in 2016 I've just sort of, when I hear a story like that, I think, yeah, he probably did not mean to do it. So, footballers have got really boring.
Oh, dearie me. Going to Arsenal, Michael Owens said that Arsenal are not designed for the physical battles in the Premier League.
Based on his communication skills alone, I don't think Michael Owen could pass the Turing test.
Okay. Well, Owen said that when Arsenal fight hard, it's a passing type of fighting hard. Is that what you mean, Tim?
It's like when Pete comes and does this show and is really hungover and he knows he's got to make a contribution, so he just says something. That's Michael Owen's whole career.
Hang on.
I'm never hungover on a Monday.
No, that's true, actually.
Yeah.
And I work Monday to Thursday, so I can't drink during the week. It's hell. Yeah. My life is hell.
To be fair, Pete, still drunk still counts.
Yeah. But your favourite drink is a funny Coca-Cola. Yeah. Better news for Arsenal, though, is that Justin Bieber was seen out running in an Arsenal away kit with six Bieber on the back, Jim.
Is that Coquelin's number? It's Coquelin.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know if that is good news. I would rather have Francis Coquelin on the pitch than Justin Bieber, I must say. Unless he's doing a concert which we make some money from.
But you almost certainly haven't seen Justin Bieber play, so give him a chance.
Yeah, exactly. He's a talented young man.
I've seen him play, actually. I've seen him. He's decent.
No,
it was him and Leo Messi taking pot shots at the goal. He was all right. I mean, growing up in America, pretty much every kid's
Canada.
Good at
Canada.
Goodbye, everyone. I want to resign. I would like to resign from the football ramble. Hang on, wait. I thought he was just from America, so why are you bothering? Why do you know that Justin Bieber's from Canada?
There's one man in this room.
Bieber.
There's one man in this room who works on a pop music radio station.
Pop music?
Yeah.
We play.
That's what
Stilt
the kids
skin.
Call it. That's what all the kids call it.
We play Stiltskin and Nickelback. Luke.
You probably think Stiltskin was from England.
I know Drake's from Canada.
Right. Put it another way, Pete. You're the only person in this room who I've honestly seen wearing a Justin Bieber t-shirt.
That's true, yeah. I am.
So you should know better.
Who are your top three Canadians? Yeah. Donald Trump.
Brian Adams. Arcade Fire.
Uncle Sam.
All right, well, there we are. Make we will of that, everybody. Justin Bieber's been seen in an Arsenal shirt.
Good.
Spurs fans will be
the most famous Arsenal fan since Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, maybe.
That's true, yeah. I mean, what I would say is you all criticise me. London, I mean, Arsenal weren't originally where they're from.
No, that's true.
So,
right,
so they moved.
Justin Bieber's American.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah, well, he's not living where he originally sprung up from, I suppose. So in a way, he is the North American Arsenal.
And I didn't get the two countries mixed up, but Marcus, last week I believe you regarded Toronto as being part of the US.
Right.
So,
did I?
You did. Yeah.
What did I say?
You said Toronto's part of America, Marcus.
I never said that.
Geography corrections.
Yeah. I said MLS,
okay. Which is fair enough.
Okay, fair dues.
To be honest, I can't exactly remember what they say, but they were in the MLS Cup final.
I just remember someone complaining on Twitter, and I believe that person more than I believe the person I hang out with every week, okay. So fair dues.
It's not as bad as Woolwich Bieber, though, is it?
Woolwich Bieber.
He must be punished.
Arsenal did lose 2-1 to Everton at Goodison Park.
Stupid.
Pulsating finish to that.
What a great match.
I thought it was great because obviously we've seen goalkeepers go up for corners before. Check. Not only did he go up for the corner,
he stuck around. Didn't he?
Hung around. He was actually caught ball watching at one moment. It was the ball knocking around. It was great.
Yeah, he was behind Stekelenburg at one point as well, which just looked
weird. Yeah, the two keepers were right.
He was loitering with intent
during the play. The two goalkeepers at one point were stood side by side, which is wonderful. Really.
You don't see it very often. It's one of those things like seeing an outfield player on goal. You like to see more of it.
Very much so. Yeah, but Arsenal did lose the game. Ronald Koeman had a little jibe at Big Wenger in the presser after the game, because Wenger was of course moaning about the referee, and Koeman dropped into the chat that he'd beaten Arsenal three times at home in the Prem as manager, and each time it is the referee's fault.
Well, Wenger hates Clattenburg, and I think he consistently hates him, and my research tells me that it was mostly stemmed from the start of the year when they lost 1-0 to Chelsea. Remember, Mertesacker got sent off really early on for a professional foul. And it was Costa who scored, and they won 1-0. I think it was at the Emirates.
Yeah.
And Wenger was annoyed about that, even though it was a quite clear cut from what I remember. And ever since, he's had a bit of a dig at Klatz ever since, I think.
It's quite rare for him to be like that. I think he'll probably get fined for that.
Join the Mourinho club.
Yeah,
Mourinho,
exactly.
Mourinho
well,
last
he should
night,
do if he's a singling out referees.
Did you see Mourinho last night? Refused to comment on anything to do with any refereeing. Brilliant. There was quite a lot of controversial refereeing decisions in the Man United at the Crystal Palace Manchester United game last night. And Mourinho refused to comment on any of them.
There was that great picture you put us on the WhatsApp thread of Mourinho basically gumming someone's elbow.
Zlatan's
elbow. Oh, he loves Zlatan.
Because Zlatan's basically scored all the goals for them.
That's right.
Yeah.
he's just going to suck him to show his appreciation.
The reason why Mourinho didn't.
That's how a lot of my friends do it. High five, guys.
They won the game, so he will just about refrain from not saying anything, but of course he's having a dig at everybody. Really.
The reason I bring it up is because there was a point in the game, obviously Zlatan scored a brilliant goal to win the match, but before that United had a goal disallowed, erroneously for offside, and I would have been interested to see if Mourinho would have been to hold his tongue in that situation, because he's been fined so many times recently.
The refereeing did go their way as well.
I thought the referee was absolutely appalling.
The first goal shouldn't have stood.
No, that's right. Yeah, but then their goal erroneously ruled out. Mm. So Pawson, who was refereeing the game, he was. I don't want to have a go at referees, especially as I've written about them in the book we wrote.
You don't want to get podcast.
Because when I wrote about them, I ended up feeling really sorry for them, and that was how difficult it was. So it feels a bit hypocritical to then go, "Oh, yeah, they were terrible," but he was genuinely really bad.
Well, you judge hypocritical doesn't mean you're wrong.
No, it's true.
But you judge people on the level of player they're at, don't you? So you judge him as a Premier League referee.
Yeah, he had a poor game.
That was a poor game.
Should you be allowed to comment on the referee at all? Because surely, if the referee's decisions are wrong, you would have thought that the governing body for the referees.
But Marcus, in the most recent Acast Plus interview I did with Howard Webb, and he said quite a few times he would prefer. He would prefer if referees or if he was able to comment to say why, because he said, and the greatest example of that was the World Cup final in 2010, mm-hmm. where he didn't send off Nigel de Jong, and he said, "I was behind." Who was it? Nigel de Jong hit
Xabi Alonso, was it?
Possibly Xabi Alonso. I was behind Xabi Alonso. I didn't actually see the karate kick into the chest. I just saw it coming together, and when the Spanish players went crazy about it, a lot of them were pointing to the ball, and he thought they were pointing to the fact they wanted an advantage, and they were going crazy about that.
Right.
But they were going crazy about the actual challenge.
Yeah.
And he said he got hammered in the press for that over and over again. And because there was no football after that for ages, he was in the press a lot longer than he would have been normally. Mm-hmm. He said if they'd allowed him to, he could have come out and said exactly what had happened, mm-hmm. and it would have been a lot better, not just for him, but for referees in general. So I do think there are some referees, certainly at the very top level, who would like to come out and say something. So there's not a vacuum there for anyone to talk about.
And that's a fair point. But
and that's
then
available on Acast Plus to download now, by the way, to all subscribers. It's only $1.99 a month, and you get ad-free rambles. There you go.
There we are.
And all the previous specials.
That's right. And then that interview is well worth it. But then you would get yourself in a bit of a sticky situation where if a referee then didn't come out and defend himself or explain himself, then you could be, I don't know.
Well, there will be some.
And Phil Neville would just tell them to shut up anyway.
Yeah, but there will be some situations where they're not going to be able to. It's not always going to be relevant. If they make a massive howler sort of 3 weeks in a row, they can't just keep coming out and saying it because they're going to do themselves out of a job.
You gave the throw in the wrong way.
It's a delicate balance to be struck.
Could there not be a referees association representative who just does it every week and just sort of goes, look,
God, imagine that job.
you just see Graham Kelly every 4 weeks going, oh, sorry, I'm a bit
like,
weird, aren't I?
Be like that press secretary for Saddam Hussein.
Comical Ali,
yeah.
Chemical.
Poor bastard.
Yeah, but it became comical.
Yeah. Sorry. Forgive me. Right, we're going to talk about Everton versus Liverpool after this.
I'm so fancy, but you already know. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. I'm so fancy, but you already know.
Just sensational. Sensational.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the preview show, everybody. That's right, it's Merseyside derby time.
Another thigh rubber. I've piped up and said Manchester City versus Arsenal is the thigh rubber of the weekend.
I mean, technically it's on a Monday night, so...
Only Pete Donaldson can judge definitively, but I would suggest that the Merseyside derby is automatically a thigh rubber.
Of course it is. Is it Klopp versus Koeman?
It is, and we were talking a week or so ago about how Everton were in a bad run of form, and... Mm-hmm. Koeman actually came out and said after the game, before the game against Arsenal, I forget who they were playing, but he said, what we need is a game like Arsenal and a game like Liverpool to get us going because we've not got the focus. And I thought, at the time, that's a bit ambitious. But it proved it. I mean, they were really up for it against Arsenal. I think they will be the same against Liverpool.
Sorry, Liverpool are unbeaten against Everton in 11 games.
Wow.
Which is, that's a long run.
I didn't realise that. That is a really good record.
But they don't have Brendan Rodgers in charge anymore, Jim.
That is true.
You know?
How do we know how honest the group is?
Or those set of results.
Yeah.
But it was a much better win, much better result, rather, for Liverpool away to Middlesbrough. That looked like the Liverpool that we've sort of come to expect under Jurgen Klopp.
One of their goals was an absolute apex of Jurgen Klopp-style goal, where they just pressured, and then bang, 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 and it was a goal.
Heavy metal goal.
And earlier in the season, we saw them struggle against Sunderland to break Sunderland down away from home. They ended up winning the game 2-0, but it took them ages.
I think that was at Anfield.
Sorry. So against sort of lesser, in quotes, teams... They can struggle to break people down if they don't score early. And against Middlesbrough, that obviously wasn't the case, and they were able to sort of steamroll them, really.
They had Mignolet back in goal after Karius had come under heavy criticism, as we mentioned earlier on in the show.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, really.
Yeah, the Neville brothers sort of double-teamed him.
It's a bit grim, this, isn't it?
Mm. Like a tag team. Klopp came out with a lot of credit, I think. He sort of basically explained, he's young enough to the point of his career where I don't have to put him in to get him through this. But you do sort of think, you'd probably keep a clean sheet against Middlesbrough, so it's probably a decent time to play. Bearing in mind what fixtures they've got next, he's not going to be in net for the derby, is he? Yeah. But Klopp, one of his quotes really made me laugh because he said, I'm not interested in public pressure, I'm interested in the boy. like Jareth from Labyrinth.
Very good. Lovely ref.
It's always a bit of a paradox because if you drop a goalkeeper when they're struggling for confidence, obviously the perceived wisdom is it makes them less confident and it makes it harder for them. And the thing I find a bit distasteful about the Neville brothers talking, and it was actually Carragher as well, by the way, not just those two, about Carragher, is they were making out that you needed to get to some sort of like minimum state of experience or credibility before you're actually allowed to talk back. Mm. And what actually happened was, Karius was scheduled to do a regular media commitment interview, and then he had this game, which was, you know, obviously he had a bit of a stinker. He never stinker, he made a mistake or two. And what I saw reported was that a lot of clubs would have taken him out the foreign line and not made him do the interview, but apparently he wanted to do it. Right. Mm. He wanted the right to reply. And he is quite experienced for a player, for a goalkeeper of his age. I think he's 23, but he's got over 100 top flight appearances under his belt already. So he obviously has got a brain in his head and he wants to defend himself, which I think is absolutely fair enough. Mm. And for them to then say, well, he should just keep his mouth shut, to me it's completely distasteful.
Well, for two players who haven't been out of the game for very long as well, which I don't understand.
With an obvious agenda as well.
So they know what it's like, and they are also the type of pundits, and we all are to an extent, who will bemoan the fact that there are no characters in the game anymore, in quotes, or people just do media-trained post-match interviews, and that's it. But then when you do get a bit back, and you want it, maybe you could turn that potentially into quite an entertaining but constructive discussion, you just want to completely shut it down. I think that's ridiculous.
But it shows that the pundits...
Pathetic.
Well, it shows that the pundits, it's all right for them to, you know, obviously say what they want about people, and then when somebody says something back, it's...
Yeah, I mean, but they have their right of reply, and you're right, Luke, that nonsense about, you know, like, oh, you have to earn your right to reply through experience, it's just simply not true of life, is it? It's absolute rubbish. And also, as you say, he is experienced in another league, but they sort of seem to just utterly disregard that.
Yeah, I know, like, it didn't even exist. But Pete's right in what he says, though, actually, going back to the football itself. Obviously, he's not going to drop Mignolet now, because he kept a clean sheet away to Middlesbrough, and they've got a big game coming up, and they want the most confident goalkeeper they can get in a Merseyside derby. So it's hard to know. I mean, you say it's hard to know when Karius is going to come back. Mignolet's always got a clanger in him anyway.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You can't keep rotating the goalkeepers round. One makes a clanger, right, you're out.
Klopp knows Karius better than all of us do. And actually, he could think to himself, I know the temperament of the player. This is going to make him better to come back. He's going to think, right, and he's going to really work on it. He's going to focus more on all the rest of it, and he'll be more ready when he gets his chance again. You know,
that's true. I don't think for one second that Klopp gives a shit. You know, I mean, the interesting thing about him signing Karius is that I believe he signed him from Mainz, which is where he spent the majority of his playing and managerial career. So obviously he's got contacts there. He knows the player well. He's going to know the fibre of his character. He's going to be absolutely convinced he's the right fit. He's not just gone out there like some of these like billionaire club owners to just buy a keeper and go, there you go. He's obviously researched it. So clearly it's a long-term signing. And I don't think it's fair anyway, in the first instance, to write off Karius as not being technically good enough, which is what I think Jeremy Carragher said in the immediate aftermath of the game, because he let in that free kick against Dimitri Payet, wasn't it? And they said, oh, you know, I'm less worried about a goalkeeper coming off the line and making a poor decision because he's not got that much experience. But when you see him letting that free kick in, he's just not technically good enough, which to me is an outrageously sweeping statement. I mean,
no player at his level is technically poor.
No,
they can't be in that position.
I recall that sweeping statement, and you can only imagine what it takes for me to record a sweeping statement.
I mean, can you imagine if you showed Klopp David James's performances in the late 90s? You know, you in net for Liverpool, Mr. Flappy.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Video Games.
Big night on the computer games.
Yeah. Mr. Exactly, Super Nintendo.
Yeah. I wonder if Karius hasn't just come up with a really ingenious way to get Christmas off.
Yeah.
Like now everyone knows about the
you've got to keep thinking. Yeah. You've got to think.
Karius-mas.
Yeah. Sergio Aguero's sending everyone picture text messages of him with his feet up in front of the fire.
And, next to Nolan.
Everyone wants a bit of that action. Yeah. Although they won't have the fire on from the southern hemisphere, it'll be very warm this time of year in Argentina.
Well, but he'd be on the barbecue, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
the fire would be outside at night.
Nice. Nice recovery.
That's all right. I did like, just before we move on, I did like the fact that Klopp said to Gary Neville, he went, oh, by the way, I'm not on Twitter, so what you say on there, you won't be able to get that through to me. Or something.
Oh, my God.
It's
the last laugh.
It's just a nice little one.
I love
it's
it.
A lovely little gem.
If Pep Guardiola had said that, you know, people would be, again, would be on him about being slightly arrogant. If Mourinho had said that, you know, it would seem like that. Jurgen Klopp is just like, you're just on the guy's side, aren't
Klopp,
you?
Don't give a damn.
Anyway, before we do move on, I should say Everton are 3-1 with Bet365 to beat Liverpool on Monday night. It's a £10 returns, £40 including your stake.
Saucy. West Brom are at home to Manchester United. Solomon Rondon with a hat-trick of headers.
Can I just say that Solomon Rondon is a very satisfying thing to say?
Yeah, right.
It's actually Salomon Rondon.
I know, but I thought Jim would like it, and he did.
You mentioned the hat-trick of headers. I've got something for you, chaps. I'm presuming you haven't researched this already. If you have, keep your mouth shut. Let the others enjoy it.
Yep.
It was the second hat-trick of headers in Premier League history.
I watched Match of the Day, so I know the answer.
Oh, that as well. Yeah. Yeah.
But don't worry, not everybody who listens
research.
It was Theo Walcott.
Little insight into my life. I didn't actually see Match of the Day. I worked really hard to research that.
Oh,
not worth it.
Worked really hard to research that. I wonder how.
What do you know about research?
You're lucky I turn up, mate.
Yeah, I don't feel lucky. Anyway, for those who didn't watch Match of the Day, who are actually listening, Duncan Ferguson was the first ever player to score a hat-trick of headers for Everton v Bolton in 1997-98. And the thing that you probably didn't hear on Match of the Day, because I've done some more research, is those goals were actually vital because Everton only finished out of the relegation zone goal difference that season. One place above, yes, Bolton. So
it was great for a header.
If you hadn't scored that hat-trick, and for beating people up, scored that hat-trick, they might not have stayed in the Premier League.
Yeah. The header's very violent. It's a very Begbie way to score a goal.
Solomon Rondon has never nearly killed a burglar.
The most violent goal I can think of is the one, I think it was against Newcastle, actually, but it's Wayne Rooney.
The volley.
He was really annoyed by a decision and was gesticulating wild at the referee.
Yep.
And the ball came over and he turned around and just smashed it in the air.
He smashed it with such finesse, though. It's back when he could do that. He had a real bend on it. That's one of my favourite Premier League goals ever, that.
Shearer's free kicks. Law and hard.
Violent.
Yeah, but it was the fact...
And when he kicked Neil Lennon in the face.
Yeah, he did volley Neil Lennon in the head.
Yeah.
Neil Lennon hit him right on the football boot with his head.
Can you imagine how hard
that
Alan
was a
Shearer...
a headbutt, that.
If you're heading a headbutt in a man's foot, you are particularly mental. Yeah.
Give me a go at his foot. With me head.
Start with his foot.
But West Brom, by the way, are in really good nick.
They've got
13 points at their last 18, and Pulis has got a chance. I think they might be in seventh at the moment.
They are. They're 4 points behind Manchester United.
Yeah, and he's got a chance of steering a team into the top half of the Premier League, I think, for the first time, because he never did that at Stoke, did he?
He's got his eye on a bonus. He needs him.
Oh, he loves it.
He needs him. He's
Matt Phillips is in fine form as well. Pulis was in the press a little while ago talking about how he sometimes struggles with confidence, and he's been trying to instill it in him, and he clearly is full of it at the moment. He's playing fantastic.
Chris
well.
Brunt firing then the crosses to Rondon.
He's got a peach of a left foot on him. Yeah. I like the idea of Tony Pulis negotiating an exactly £3.7 million bonus to finish in the top half.
I like a better image of him stripping the copper out of the radiators and selling it down the scrap.
Imagine if he had negotiated a bonus that big, and imagine how mad he would be in the dressing room before game. You are going to win this game.
He's done a Ranieri. He's going to win the league.
Yeah. Do you want to see a 50-odd-year-old man sleep in the back of his car, and you will win this game?
So we'll be naked headbutts all round. Side of Berahino back from fat camp, sitting there thinking, don't pick me, don't pick me.
He's at home, like, just awake at night. Sido,
can you lend me some money, Sido? Let's get that move on, come on.
If Side of Berahino leaves the club for £3.75 million, I won't say any more.
Imagine him calling Sido up from the bench in the middle of the game. Sido, come over. Starts taking the tracks off. No, lend me a tenner.
But Manchester United, back-to-back wins in the Premier League. Eh? Shouldn't really have to point that out for a Manchester United team.
I think, although, for me, I'm a bit torn here, because last show we talked about them looking a bit disjointed, and looking a little bit, I think one of us, I genuinely forget who it was.
Well, they are disjointed.
Look a bit all over the place. And that game they won last time round before the Palace game was the first Premier League game they won at home for quite a while.
It was yourself.
No, I said that bit, yeah. Okay. I said that bit. But when I saw them against Palace, I actually thought they controlled the game pretty well. And for large parts of it, they looked really good. I mean, they did look decent.
What a save from De Gea.
It was a fantastic save. Clawed it right at the top corner. It was a fantastic save. But they do look, very, very occasionally during games, really vulnerable. And Palace were able to carve them open with a nice move, but it was fairly easy. Mm-hmm. And you wonder whether that's going to be the undoing for them, because Mourinho's teams don't tend to do that type of thing. Mm. And I think he's struggling to really get that sort of tightness.
He's trying to get them going. Did he wind Marcos Rojo up a little bit too much?
God, I think... I know this is probably not going to be the majority of you, but I think he's an awful defender. Mm. I think he's bad, Marcos. I mean, his surname...
Well, if he's diving in with 2 feet every time, that is the mark of a poor defender.
I'm sure a lot of people have said this, but his surname in Spanish, it does mean red.
Red, does it?
Yeah. Rondon against Rojo, fake hard man Rojo, as you've called him before, Luke. It's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be a tough ask.
Rocco is living testament to the fact that you can cover yourself in tattoos and be from Argentina and not necessarily be hard.
There's not many people who would fit the not hard man bill with that.
It's one step below you calling him out, this.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that. He's definitely hard enough to beat me up. But the other thing about Rocco is that, do you remember there would be a time when you'd have players who would commit terrible fouls and do things that are clearly not in the rules? Mm. Like Vinnie Jones, for example. Mm. That video we put up on YouTube a while back of Vinnie Jones taking out Eric Cantona. Oh, vintage Vinnie Jones.
It's waist high.
It is. But at no point does Vinnie Jones start giving it all that one and go, no, to the referee, what are you doing? It's not a card. He just takes his medicine. Marcus Rocco's a great exponent of doing that type of challenge and then moaning about it. And I'll tell you who
you could get a lot more medicine back in the day, though.
I'll tell you who used to do that as well. It does that all the time. Mascherano does that all the time.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, though, that, and this does make me sound like a little Englander, it's obviously not what I do, but that is quite prevalent with Argentinian players and a lot of players who are from other footballing cultures.
It's known in Argentina as a Creole's cunning, which is the English translation of what they call it. I think it's Creola Vivezza or something like that, where it is a very much a recognised tactic to just try and get away with bending the rules, or in fact outright breaking them sometimes. Well, there is a culture of it.
I mean, look, Argentina is a wonderful country. It really is. But in footballing terms, though, they are quite well known for being able to dish it out and never taking it.
I mean, that's a strong sentence, isn't it?
That's a
definition
of war, that.
If I'm offered that Marcos Rojo, he just offered that a whole country.
Sunk the Belgrano with that.
It's like Alan Wicker pissing on the Alamo.
Despite that noise, it's not a laughing matter.
No, exactly. And I'm glad you brought it back.
Marcos, I'll stick up for you there. I mean, Jim's absolutely right, but I'll stick up for you.
Now, what I mean is, but if you look at some of the behaviour of some of the Argentinian players, I mean, Sir Alf Ramsey obviously didn't want them to swap shirts as England players. But when they...
Yeah, he did call them animals, didn't he? Yeah,
he did call them animals. Yeah.
And that, I think that match, the World Cup match that we're referring to, is known as the robbery of the century in Argentina.
but when they were playing against Germany in 2006, when the German players were going up to take their penalties, you know, they were shouting, they were, you know, in cricket terms, sledging. They were sledging him, all this kind of stuff. And then if somebody, I think one of the German players turned around and like smiled, and maybe it was Podolski, and he scored, and they all went absolutely mental.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of vibe. I love Argentinian football and culture, by the way.
Wow. There was a caveat. It's fine. We like strong, robust opinions.
It's not a caveat. It's a full-on drag bag here.
In the words of our Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, a robust opinion. That's what we like.
That's all I can hear. Vehicle reversing.
Marcus is rowing all the way back to the boathouse. Listen, all I was going to say
and
was...
And I'm veeing them all as I go.
There was a period of time in the Argentinian League where I think someone crunched some numbers and worked out some... obviously, it turned out to be erroneous, but a correlation between the team who fouls the most tends to win the most games.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think it was to do with some sort of intimidation or... And apparently a load of teams started doing it, and to the point where it got ridiculous. They were sending players off left, right and centre. I think there had to be some sort of like moratorium on it and that to stop it. So there is a history of... Argentina is probably the only country in footballing terms which has got a reputation not only for silky skill and amazing technique but also being hard and kicking people,
which is one
well.
Of the reasons why I do love Argentinian football and culture and the players that they've produced over the years and the teams and so on and so forth. But to finish that chat, I mean, Jonathan Wilson's book about the history of Argentina is called Angels with Dirty Faces.
That's all you need to know. I think West Brom will smell blood here when United comes to town. I think they know United can be got at. I think United obviously will be keen to keep their run going, that's obvious, but I wouldn't dissuade people from thinking that West Brom could win this game. I mean, Man United are now 6-4 with Bet365 to finish in this season's top four. It's an interesting market. I've mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. It's something to keep an eye on because the price does change a lot, because I don't think people can work them out properly yet. So 6-4 with Bet365. So £10 on that can net you £25 including your stake. Should Jose's boys go on a run. And as Marcus said earlier, they're only 6 points off it currently.
Very true. We move on to the big South Coast derby. It's Bournemouth versus Southampton. I think
it's a South Coast derby.
I nearly scripted that.
Gobble down the bait.
It's the big, North East derby. Middlesbrough versus Hartlepool.
Middlesbrough versus Sunderland, because it currently is, because they're both in the top flight.
True.
Matt Letizia is better than any player that's ever played for Portsmouth.
Even Robert Prozinecki. An awful lot of discipline shown by Luke Moore there.
Imagine if all of Southampton's youth team players came back at the same time. What
a force they'd be.
Yep.
But they won't, Peter. What was their walk-up? Might never know. But Gareth Bale's gone.
I can see Phil Walcott getting a move to Southampton. I can see that.
Both sides are on 21 points. Southampton ahead in ninth, Bournemouth in 10th. Jack Wilshere has played more minutes this season than he has in the last 2 years at Arsenal. You have to go back to
that. That is funny. That is telling and funny.
He's been injured for pretty much all of those seasons, though. So it's a slightly naughty stat.
But that's the point. Arsenal can't get their players fit. Isn't that the point?
Now he's precious about their team. That's the reason I don't mind it. It always goes round. It'll be Donaldson next, and then we'll start talking about Rangers. Yeah. Spurs will get the arse on.
Top of the league, mate. Not bothered.
Needless to say, Luke and Portsmouth had the last laugh.
Which we never seem to do in everyday life.
Take them all you can, mate.
Hey, you remember an FA Cup win, all right? A lot of people will never see their team win the FA Cup.
The memory is fading, but I do still remember.
Stop drinking, then.
It's very hazy.
Wilshere, though, he hasn't scored or registered an assist yet this season, but he is beginning to, dominate games, perhaps might be too strong. But he's certainly having a big influence.
He plays from quite deep, though, doesn't he?
Do you know what stats? That's right, Jim. And I was going to say the stat I quite like at the moment is what percentage of games are won with that player in the team and what aren't. Because we talked about Cazorla being really important. I think we've talked about Jermaine Defoe being really important for Sunderland. Mm-hmm. And I'll be interested to know. I don't know, but I'll be interested to know what they are with Wilshere and the team for Bournemouth.
Well, that's that with Michael Carrick.
Carrick is such a good player, such a good midfield player. That's to me, when you've got a player who isn't really going to contribute that many goals or assists, because he never really scored that many goals at Arsenal.
No, he's never been prolific.
So it'd be nice to know how influential he's being for that team more generally.
Also, for their style of play, they are very positive, aren't they? They do go forward a lot, and they try to sort of take the game to whoever they're playing, pretty much. And to do that, and do it successfully, especially in a league like the Premier League, you've got to be pretty robust in at the base of midfield, and that is something he provides, and he distributes the ball very well, quickly.
I don't think he'll go back to Arsenal, by the way.
I don't know if he will either. It'd be interesting to see what happens to him. Because he's not exactly having digs at Arsenal on social media or anything like that, but he doesn't...
And rightly so.
No, but he's quite... he's been very sort of pro-Bournemouth and very sort of embracing his new sort of club. And I wonder if that's him sort of just actually kind of expressing that he's thinking about the future and that might not be at Arsenal.
He's probably more free to do it. I mean, if you go to a club like Bournemouth and you're Jack Wilshere, you're probably the biggest name that's ever played for the club in their history. And so if you start saying, oh, you know, come on Bournemouth and G them up from your Twitter account or wherever you may be doing it, that they would absolutely love it. Whereas Arsenal is a much more controlled environment for obvious reasons. Although it hasn't controlled him that much. You remember when he was hiding behind the bins outside that nightclub, talking about naughty man bins.
At least he hid.
Not very well, though, because he was literally seen.
We're talking about it, Jim.
Who knows how many other bins he's hid behind?
Well, there we are. Maybe but,
he might be amazing at it.
Yeah, he could be.
He could hide behind a boy on the South Coast.
Yeah, he could. Do you know what they call a boy in America? Buoy.
Yeah, oh, they do, don't they?
That's how it's spelled, though, isn't it?
Sort of, yeah. But anyway, speaking of buoys... Boys in black and red for Bournemouth. £10 on Bournemouth to beat Southampton at 15-8 with Bet365 will return you £28.75, including your stakes. So they could have the best. To be fair, I've got no beef with Bournemouth as a Portsmouth fan. I'd like to sit and beat Southampton.
I've got no beef with Bournemouth as a Portsmouth fan. No. That was just an enjoyable thing to hear, mate.
I've got no beef with Bournemouth. Oh, I can't do it again.
Yeah. What's our bet of the week, Luke?
Our bet of the week is we're going all the way back up to Goodison Park from the South Coast.
Stupid.
Which would be, I think, A303. M3, M25, M1, and then it gets a bit hazy after that, but that's where we're going. Over 3.5 goals in Everton versus Liverpool is 7-4 with Bet365. We're going to have a little tickle on that. £50 will return us £137.50, including our stake, with all proceeds going to prostatecancer.co.uk. You must be over the age of 18 to bet, and please gamble responsibly. And for more information, do go to gambleaware.co.uk.
Lovely old job.
Before Pete goes to the emails, I thought that the Chelsea's good run in the Premier League was going to come up as a topic of conversation. It obviously didn't. They've won how many goals?
10.
10 in a row now. Worth pointing out that Juventus are going for their 25th home win in a row when they play Rome at the weekend.
Wow.
So that was worth mentioning as a lovely little stat.
And that's a big one against
25
Roma.
Home wins in a row.
Yeah. Oof. Different gravy granules, Peter. Mm. Give us some emails, you bugger.
Rude. This is from Andy Duncan. Ahoy, chaps. My highlight of the week was definitely... I'm doing the highlight of the week that we didn't use last show. Was the continuation of Howling Mad Marcus' bizarre statements. Last week, it was an inexplicable defence of Alan Pardew and his below-average managerial record. This week, it was denying evolution, which he didn't actually do.
No, he didn't.
We've all heard him do it.
The Pardew one, I didn't defend him. I said, you know, actually, well, let's... Played a bit of devil's advocate there.
Yeah. And, okay, and
the devil into everything.
And the dinosaur bones were for God to test us.
Chicken bones. No, I've never denied evolution. Carry on. So he's wrong on both. He's wrong on both. He's not doing very well.
I have to say, I did hoist up that particular straw man
for a bit of fun. Yeah. And it's worked massively.
What's the emailer's name?
It is Andy Duncan.
Yeah, Andy, you've fallen for that. Hook, line, sinker. So thanks for providing us with our content.
Well, it got Howling Mad Marcus Howling Mad, didn't it? It goes on to say, Marcus, no, let me finish the email. And he goes on to continue, a suggestion that this Real Madrid team isn't that great, the same Madrid side who have won 2 of the 3 Champions Leagues and are 30 plus games unbeaten. To my mind, there are only 2 explanations for you being a bit crazy, Speller. Either you're having a bit of a wobble, and we should expect a Keegan-esque video of him bawling about the lads from Football Weekly. They've got to analyse Borough versus Swansea and come up with something, and I'll tell you what, I will love it if we outrank them on iTunes. Or he's putting in a series of displays so woefully bad, he's trying to get Christmas off.
Could that
be the point?
You are the king of this show in this court.
And just leave it there.
No, I was actually going to go further. I was going to say, if I was on the emails, that wouldn't have made it in, mate.
I appreciate that very much.
Also, Zidane's Real Madrid haven't won 2 Champions Leagues.
No, they haven't. But the point I was making with Zidane's Real Madrid, I said, and he's doing this with not a classic Real Madrid side. And then Jim actually corrected me and said, actually, if we look at some of their players, and I went, well, yeah, okay, yeah, maybe I might be wrong there. So up yours, Andy.
Yeah.
But thanks for emailing in.
Yeah. Good. If you want to email with a corrections and clarifications email next week, you're more than welcome to do something.
Hello to Sandeep Singhman, the commentator on Match of the Day, describing Jeff Hendrick's screamer as one for the family album. Here's your Auntie Jane. That's your Uncle Alan. And here's one I twatted in against Bond.
He could do that. that because you know you can get, Pete, you'll know this better than me. I'm pretty sure you can get photo frames that are electronically displayed now, right?
Yes, and the sort of. They could show videos. Think they probably do, don't they?
Stick that on the mantle.
It's a waste of electricity. Friend of the show, Murray Jones, has shown me a picture of. He WhatsApped me a picture of him watching on Netflix, like a fire video that you can stream.
Like a Christmas fire.
Yeah.
All those noughts and ones being transmitted all the way from Blumen Iceland, a server in Iceland, dynamically.
And also, you can't watch TV while that's on.
No,
it's on Netflix.
Well, it's just a waste of time for everyone and electricity. I don't know.
Is this a new section?
I don't know.
Wife gripes.
No, a new section. A waste of time for everyone. start a show with it.
I'd argue this show very much fits the bill. Josh in South Wales. Hello, chaps. Long time listener, first time emailer, and dairy farmer here. At the start of Peter Tarmac in the elderly rant in the previous show, he said that Mike Leavis should stop pretending to be a farmer. I thought I should inform you guys that as recently as 2014, his dairy herd won the prestigious Gold Cup. Since its inception in 1920, the Gold Cup has been the most coveted award in the dairy industry, and the trophy is regarded as an award for an all-round excellent performance, although it is widely acknowledged that giving the award was a PR stunt and he didn't deserve it at all.
Josh in South Wales. Not annoyed that he didn't win it at all. But you know, speaking of that, I was on Twitter day before yesterday, and someone tweeted us, and I didn't recognise the name or anything like that, but it was quite a funny tweet, so I clicked in their profile, came up, official farmer of the Ramble. I don't even remember giving it to him. So if he's claimed that...
We had some funny Coca-Cola.
If you're listening to this, make yourself known, because I want to confirm that. Official farmer of the Ramble.
Gordon Bennett. There we are. Any more for any more?
No.
Well, thanks very much for listening to the previous show sponsored by Bet365. It is nearly Christmas. You'll probably need a new book. The Football Ramble book is out.
Yeah.
Get it.
Go and get it now.
Do you want a quick email about the book?
Yeah.
Of course, it seems appropriate.
It kind of works. I think it just shows the breadth of subjects we tackle on the Football Ramble book.
Can I just say, he won't read an email out that could further our book sales, but he'll read one out digging at me.
Correctly.
A couple of jabs against you is just what you need, mate. Don't worry about that. I personally wouldn't let the email in. But I'm happy you got a couple of jabs.
I'm just happy that Carrier Speller has a long career in front of him.
All right.
Yeah. And he's not bothered.
Gary Donaldson.
When you got a few more shows under your belt, you can have a right to reply, right?
Andreas Sanchez says, I'm loving the audiobook of the Football Ramble, available at audible.co.uk/footballramble, as well as other reputable online retailers. And the revelation of Pete's sexual awakening at the hands of Michelle Gale and her appearance on Top the Pops performing Sweetness.
That's a great tune. Great pop tune.
Great tune.
Bring it in now.
I wonder, though, if amidst his heightened state of onanistic reverie, Pete noticed Michelle cocking up her lip syncing during the song, mouthing the words baby, while the backing song played Honey. That, for me, was the day that the music died, because he thought that Top of the Pops performances were actually live. Oh. So, in the words of Barry Davies, I say.
Did you email
this? I say.
No, that was Andres Sanchez.
Andres Sanchez. Exactly the sort of name you would invent.
Andres Sanchez.
No, that was Andres Sanchez.
I wanted to cover off.
That must have been Dr. Cornelius.
It's like Jake Silver in Parks and Rec.
I wanted to cover off the book plug, which is really hard to say.
Have you got a secret life as a jazz trumpeter? Oh dear.
There we are, that's it, I think.
Buy the book, it's got Michelle Gale in it. Yeah.
Say goodbye, Jim.
I'm still not sure how that was a plug for the book.
I don't know.
We mentioned the book. I didn't think there was going to be one earlier on.
You mentioned the book about 2 seconds, they went and talked about Michelle Gale for about 10 minutes.
Let's just think about Michelle Gale for
a bit. She's not in the book, that's what I'm saying.
If anything, you need to mention it in the book. We need to leave again. Say goodbye, Jim.
Book.
Then goodbye, Jim. Luke.
Goodbye, that's me, I'm Luke, yeah, goodbye.
Say goodbye, Peter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.